Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm Paul David, founder and CEO of Literal Humans. And I've got two great guests today. They're taking me back to my days in education. I've got Robert Cobbs, the CEO and founder of Tech My School, and also the director of development at Tech My School, Kyle Sumrow. Welcome to the pod, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you.
It's good to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about bringing modern ed tech to underserved schools. This is a cause that's near and dear to my heart as a former teacher in underserved schools in Philadelphia and around the U.S. By way of introduction, Robbie and Kyle are bringing an incredible amount of ed tech innovation, and they're frankly leading what's happening in the Caribbean in terms of ed tech innovation. Tech My School is a Caribbean's leading ed tech consulting nonprofit, serving over 40 schools across Puerto Rico, the U.S., and internationally. Robbie brings more than 20 years of experience as an educator, technology director, and consultant, and is also the creator of Tech Plan Genie, an AI-powered platform that helps schools build strategic technology plans. Kyle brings nearly 15 years of international technology leadership experience from Switzerland to Vietnam to Saudi Arabia. Sounds like you've got some good stories. Directing innovation programs and building STEM and maker cultures and training educators at scale. Together, Robbie and Kyle are helping schools modernize systems, close digital gaps, and create student-centered learning environments in communities that have historically been underserved. Thank you guys for your service and welcome to the pod, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So let's jump in and let's set the scene for our audience here. You know, we want to, you know, help them understand why so many schools still struggle to modernize technology effectively, especially now when schools have more tech than ever, it seems like. But many are feeling very overwhelmed and underprepared. Help us understand what's driving this disconnect that we're seeing.
At least from my perspective, I think a lot of it has to do with we do what's done to us. So when we were growing up, we didn't have a lot of this technology. I mean, when I was an elementary school student, I still had green screen computers and, you know, we used to play this game called Fraction Muncher. That was about the extent of computers when I was a kid. So for many of these educators, they were taught a certain way. They think of school a certain way. When they become teachers, they think, I'm just going to do what was done to me. And they feel like, you know, I don't want to step out of my comfort zone and do something that is unknown. Right now, as we know, technology is just rapidly improving, increasing, transforming our lives. And with that, sometimes there's a hesitation, you know, to that. So I think that plays a big part of why teachers are a bit hesitant to jump into it, take things on. One more small thing I'll add is that I feel like when educators begin their career, They're very malleable. They get into the profession. They're open-eyed. They try all the things. They ask all the questions. And that's why generally in schools, your younger teachers are the ones who are more techie, more innovative. They're more open to try things. And then after about, you know, 2 or 3 years, that malleability goes away and it kind of hardens. And you kind of figure, I know how to teach. I know what I'm doing. And then you kind of just stick in stone. You're like, I've got it. And then you kind of stay in that kind of time frame the rest of your career for the most part. And, you know, you get 15 years into the job and you're kind of like, well, I've always done it a certain way. I'm successful. I was successful when I was a new teacher. I know what I'm doing. And whatever's new is, you know, it's just a fad.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of, it's weird. We ask people and students to be open-minded, to be learners. And I feel like teachers are only truly learners when they enter the field. And then once they kind of get it, they kind of feel like, okay, I've got this. I know what I'm doing. And they just kind of close their mind a little bit in terms of what they should be doing. And again, which is why these younger teachers are doing all these techie things. The older teachers are kind of stuck in whatever era they came into the profession. And that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, the system kind of grinds you down. And you guys reminded me of one of my favorite lessons. I was an English teacher and, you know, I had to teach eighth grade kids about genre. And genre, it's like a meta concept, right? Like it's kind of, you know, these different types of literature and things like that and reading. And I brought in my iPod and I remember I put different genres of music on and the kids were like, oh, that's country because it's got like this banjo and oh, that's rock because it's got, you know, this like electric guitar and, you know, so on and so forth. And I was like, okay, well, translate that into, you know, how you think about different types of reading. And then they all got it. And it was like one of my top lessons. I was really proud of myself as an educator. But definitely I felt that Robbie was like, I wasn't as innovative in further years on as I was that first year when I was trying to pull all the stops out and really bring tech into the classroom. It sort of leads me to the next question around student expectations. Digital learning needs have changed a lot since the pandemic. And I'd be curious, like, myths and misconceptions do school leaders often have about what technology integration really requires? Because it feels like that's kind of at the root is, you know, these beliefs that people have and also, you know, what students have come to expect as well.
I think there's a huge mismatch in terms of the skill set, right? So it's really interesting that you brought that up, the idea of genre, because you're talking about concepts, right? Concepts by definition are transferable between different areas, which is why that is such an effective approach. The focus on concepts, I think conceptual understanding is a really important piece of sort of this next generation of skill set. So I believe that the skill set that industry is asking us for it didn't change for a lot of years, right? It was a really slow change. New piece of tech would come out and there were a couple of new things, right? 50 years ago, it was like, can you type, right? Like typing was sort of like the new thing. The new skill set, and when we talk to schools, we talk about like the DQ Institute is probably the most comprehensive. It takes 20 different organizations, including ISTE standards, which a lot of schools use. It looks at the OECD reports for job reports. It has, I think there's an Australian component to it. There are a whole bunch of like 20 different inputs, and they have basically come up with a framework that they use for like a skill set for kids. And those skills are, I think, the piece that there's maybe a lack of vision in leadership in schools a lot of times, where we are so concerned with making today look like yesterday and not making mistakes that we have missed out on kind of an updated growth mindset for where we need to move. So those competencies, DQ has it separated into 8 areas and then 4 levels with each of those. So, and the levels I think are the important piece, and they might be surprising when you're thinking about technology, right? They have a technical understanding, cognitive understanding, metacognitive understanding, and social emotional understanding. So when we're talking about the new skill set, sort of the next gen skill set, there's really been a focus now on social emotional learning. And, you know, parents are concerned about that with screen time and with social media and all these different pieces. But what schools are really struggling with right now is they're paralyzed. I think there's a lot of fear, and in no small part because there's so much pushback from the parent communities right now. We're not just trying to force more technology in. And I think Robbie can speak to this as well, but we're feeling a little bit of a retreat from technology, where it's not that less is actually going into the classroom. It's that there's this conceptualization that the parent communities bring into the schools to say, hey, we want to see a little bit less tech, right? And so you see the phone bans that are happening right now. You see sort of some different components in public schools that are going on. But I don't know if, Robbie, if you have anything to add to that part.
Yeah, I'll just mention the fact that I guess every school is kind of different in terms of their appetite for technology, you know, ranging from Montessori all the way up to like a high-tech high or something like that. But you're right, there is definitely a pushback currently, because it's not just the screen time kids are getting at school. It's just when they get home, it's so easy for parents to give their child a device and use it as a babysitter. And then with that, the parents are like, well, I see my kid at home and they're on the screen all day. Well, if they go to school, they're on screens all day again. It's like they need to have some sort of balance. And so that's kind of the issues that schools are facing currently.
That's an interesting thing too. It's like, yeah, like, you know, where responsibility lies and sort of, you know, maybe for some parents, the expectation is kind of, okay, they come home, I need to get them situated and they can just hang, but schools are responsible for the, you know, social interaction. And, you know, and I think people tend to put so much on schools, you know, like there was a point when I was teaching and I was basically like a nurse, because I had a student who didn't have, you know, proper refrigeration at home. So I was storing her insulin for diabetes in my fridge in my classroom, right? Like that's like deep poverty, deep, you know. And then we're feeding kids. Like, it's just schools get dumped everything on them, you know. And it's like, when do I have time to focus on just teaching, you know, and really, you know, helping kids level up for the skill that I've been, you know, trained to teach them in, you know, in my case it was reading and social studies, right? Which I think is a good segue to kind of, let's talk about your product, right? You know, schools have all these tremendous needs and you know, there's pushback. I think you've laid the landscape really well. How exactly does, you know, Tech My School help schools upgrade their systems and empower educators? And if you can, kind of walk us through your approach. When a school signs up with, you know, Tech My School, what happens first?
Yeah, so thank you for that. With Tech My School, like anyone who comes into leadership, they're kind of mentally doing a checklist of things the school has and things the school doesn't. Where are the strengths? Where are the weaknesses? Those kinds of things. And so what we've done is essentially is systematize that process of looking at a school in three different ways. And this is particular for ed tech. So the first is we look at the educational systems of a school. This would be anything you can create, make, or touch, computers, you know, policies, curriculum, anything like that. So we have a whole kind of checklist that we do when we're looking for gaps and strengths and those kinds of things. The second part we look at is building capacity. So that's, you know, how does adult learning happen in a school? That's a very, very important piece to any school's growth and health. And then the third part we look at is student empowerment. So what are kids actually doing in the classrooms? What opportunities do they have? Extracurricular, in class, you know, et cetera. So those are kind of the three lenses. But when we go into a school, we don't just come into a school and, you know, we are going in there with a clipboard and making all these notes. We try to be malleable and adapt to every school because every school has its own culture. Like every student, students get an IEP for individualized educational learning plans. We do the same thing. We call it an ITP. Individualized tech plan for the school. And so what we do is we ask the school to create a cohort of different stakeholders who have a different lens in the school. So your director of teaching and learning, your principal or leadership, different teachers who are kind of the adventurers or the teachers who are the staycationers, you know, teachers who have different appetites for technology. And then once all these people are in a room, we simply just ask questions and we base it off these rubrics that are centered in these different lenses. And after this discussion of, you know, asking the teachers and the administrators about their school and where they feel they are, and, you know, a couple different components, we have our own kind of subset of standards and questions that we ask, but then we also kind of use some of Robert Dilt's work with his levels of learning, because we want to look at both what's present, but then also how do people feel about their school, like from an emotional standpoint, where do they identify? And at the end of the process, we get a lot of great data that helps us create this individualized plan for the school. And then we set it on a scope and sequence and timeline it out for the year and then set them on a four-staged roadmap. This roadmap isn't, you know, by year, because schools may traverse through the roadmap at different speeds. Some schools, it might take them 3 years to get to the next step. Other schools might skip a step because they're just so, you know, connected and you know, they work really hard to do that. So it just depends on the speed of the school and the culture of the school. But This process is great for any school, whether you're a top school in the U.S., a private school that has all the money in the world, or you're a school that's, you know, trying to figure it out, a public school that has no money. It doesn't matter. It's all about where that school is at and then moving onward from there.
That's amazing. It sounds like you take the, you know, the idea of like partnership really seriously and, you know, you sort of meet them where they are and walk them on a path that's, you know, quite personalized to their unique use case. So that's fantastic. We try to do the same with it with our partners as well. And I think that's just a better way to deliver, you know, a service. People like to talk about productizing things and, you know, everything's customizable. But at the end of the day, like, people really do need their handheld. They need, you know, support. They need guidance almost every step of the way. And it's more intensive, but it's also more human. So,
you know, what's interesting though in that process is that it's a non-judgmental process from our side. And I think sometimes schools are, especially really high performing schools, they may be a little bit hesitant to have us come in because they're like, well, we don't want you coming in and telling us what to do. And honestly, that's not how the process works. The process is you tell us what you want to do. So we come in and as Robbie would say, we just come in and ask hard questions and facilitate conversations. And the coolest thing about it, the juice of the whole process are the conversations that happen with the team, because there's mismatches that they don't even know about, right? We use that phrase, you don't know what you don't know. That's like, that's our trade, is basically coming in and unearthing, not even us, it's helping them to unearth the things that they didn't already know about themselves. And the plans, because they're contextual, just like an IEP for a specific student, they're context-based. They're based on the mission, the visions, the core values of that school. they tell us what they want to see in their plan. We don't tell them what they should have in their plan. So
right.
Strategic planning is a super important piece of what schools do. And a lot of times with technology, it's kind of an afterthought. Strategic planning, we dive into academics, we dive into leadership and structural pieces. But a lot of times we fail to recognize this massive piece of our budget, and it has an outsized impact, honestly, because tech is everywhere through most schools. So if you're flying blind, it's kind of a dangerous place to be. So we're there to, even as, you know, we were talking, people are pulling back a little bit and saying like, we want less tech. Mm-hmm. You still have to have a plan that guides whatever that vision is.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think speaking to the power of like diagnosis, like people underdo diagnosis, I think, in tech, and it's so much, you know, like lack of co-designing with educators. I mean, we do what's called a strategic growth assessment when we, you know, begin to onboard a new client partner. And, you know, what's the famous Einstein statement? It's like, if I had an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend 50 minutes just like trying to understand the question, right? Understand the problem itself before even coming up with solutions. And so like that power of like a really good diagnosis, and I think it helps people discover that like the answers to their problems are largely within, you know, like they've got all the tools and they just need a little bit of guidance and maybe a little bit of outside insight and support to kind of get there. So I really appreciate that. And you know, we try to do similar. I wanted to ask about, you must have such good data from all this. So you've been working with, you know, over 40 schools, you know, professional development, implementation, long-term strategic planning. What are the patterns you're starting to see across the schools? And interestingly, like, are you leveraging that data in you know, new engagements in terms of, oh, we learned this and we're now going to try this with, you know, future schools? What's that look like?
Yeah, so we definitely have a lot of data. It's interesting because the demographic of a school, we can almost go into a school without even going into a school and kind of knowing, and we'll know exactly where their strengths and weaknesses are just because of those consistent patterns. One of the things we find is that for well-to-do schools, let's just say the wealthier private schools, what they're strong at is they have all the things that money can buy, but a lot of times they have really highly skilled administrators who have fancy degrees and, you know, they're very specialized. And what ends up happening is they all seem to want to accomplish their goal, which then creates these kind of silos. And then these silos create a kind of a lack of communication between these different silos. And it's that kind of human connection, that professional development connection within that structure. That's where we've noticed gaps. Obviously, with, you know, the poorer schools, the systems components are going to be lacking, whether it's, you know, a lack of devices or software programs or, you know, infrastructure. However, real success happens within schools when a leader buys in to growth, to communication, to having that growth mindset. It doesn't matter what the school looks like, whether it's a poor school, a rich school, or somewhere in between. The schools we have the greatest success with are those that have leaders who are open to the process, who want the best for their teachers and their school, and then actually reinforce the message that we're bringing and reinforce these professional developments that we deliver with schools. You know, we've served schools that I was working with schools in Africa before coming to Puerto Rico, which is why I started Tech My School, just because of that disparity. Do amazing, amazing things in their classrooms. Conversely, I've worked with schools that are super, super wealthy and they have all the things, but they're kind of stuck in the Stone Age a little bit because they don't have that reinforcement from leadership, and leadership's stubborn, and they kind of have this, you know, attitude that they know better and, you know, they can keep doing what they're doing. So I think those are the biggest trends. Obviously, if I wanted to bring it down to the granular level, I could tell you, oh, this LMS system or this SI system is more common than the other or whatever. But I think just from a 30,000 foot level, those are the kind of big trends.
Yeah. I'd love to hear about, like, you know, specifics around, like, you know, how you help schools. You know, obviously they have these barriers, these, you know, challenges around, you know, limited staff capacity, outdated infrastructure, tight budgets. You alluded to a few of them just a second ago, Robbie. Helping us understand how, you know, Tech My School helps them navigate these constraints, because they're real constraints. You know, I think anyone who's an educator can tell you this. And then also, how do you help, you know, in the midst of those constraints, which feel real and important, and how do you help schools, you know, build that long-term tech capacity and savvy rather than just relying on kind of one-off, you know, workshops or tools to kind of fix things?
Yeah. So essentially we create the ITP, this individualized tech plan. Within the tech plan, we have all of the data from the school. From the surveys, you know, what parents, teachers, students are feeling, what the committee is feeling like. We know what we need to provide, because Tech My School is a nonprofit. So essentially what we do is we raise money to then fill those gaps for schools, you know, by providing thousands of devices, softwares, you know, experiences. We put on the biggest ed tech conference in the Caribbean. We front the bill for majority of that, you know, allowing teachers to come for free. We've paid for over, you know, 500 teachers to attend this, you know, kind of five-star event. So really what kind of keeps everything going, rather than just like, here's a one-off, here's Snorkel or something like that, is having this plan, tracking the progress as we go through the plan, having a set scope and sequence, and then using that data as we're, you know, we project what we think teachers are going to, you know, like or use, or, you know, where they'll be as a staff as we do these professional developments. But you never know, like every staff is different and their speeds are different. So we kind of use this data to kind of guide the speed of which we train, but we have an outline for the year. And then using the checklist, using these, the ITP, we are able to kind of reflect on it every single year and then push them through this roadmap that kind of keeps them on a continuum of where they should be and, you know, where they're heading.
Yeah.
So that data, that plan, that's really kind of our center for keeping it going. And then another thing is, we'll go and we'll do an all-staff professional development or a division professional development. And then the following day, we go in and we do classroom observations. So we have a tool for that observation. We're doing, you know, whether it's a kindergarten classroom or a 12th grade science class, we're in there giving notes. We have a product for that. And then at the end of the day, we have a trends document. So we meet with the head of school, the principal, whoever, and then we say, this is what we're seeing in your school right now. Here's what we like. Here's some things that we're concerned about. And that way the leadership knows what's going on, because a lot of times principals may do, you know, classroom observations, but it's like planned, it's scheduled, kind of becomes a dog and pony show. Some administrators are better than other ones doing walkthroughs and those kinds of things. But just having that third person perspective of going in, showcasing, you know, all the data that we find in that classroom, and then using that data to help guide the following month's professional development has been really impactful for us.
There's a benefit actually to having us be a third party too, like he was alluding to, right? That some, when leaders come through, when your boss comes through your classroom as a teacher, all of us who've been in the classroom know what that feels like. You're like, oh, I have to be on my best here, right? Like, this better be my A game, can't fail, you know? And so we come in a very anonymous way. So like, we're very transparent about that. We're not there to out specific teachers for specific practices or something like that. And the longer they work with us, the more that they get on board with that. And then they start to appreciate the growth that they get, the feedback they get from us. And they realize that we're not sharing their names with the school leaders. We're not saying, hey, Jim over there in the science class, like, he's doing terribly in this area, whatever. What we'll tell them is, like he said, are with trends. And to be honest with you, like, we have a terrible business model, because our goal is basically to work ourselves out of a job. When we talk about sustainability, and we don't want clients for 10 years, we want clients for like 2, 3, 4 years, right? Because our goal is to be able to increase capacity to the point where they do not need us there anymore. So like, full stop, we're trying to get out, but we want to make sure that they have the tools that they need and they understand the skills that the kids need. I read a great book when I was in my very first teacher training program called You Can't Teach What You Don't Know. And that phrase is pretty appropriate here, in the sense that, like, that's where they're at. They just don't know what they don't know. And you can't teach it if you don't know it. So we're there to kind of help them, you know, reconfigure their vision for what they want to be doing with their school, and specifically through the lens of technology. The interesting part about it is that technology is... what we do is all about teaching and learning. It's all about relationships with kids. It's about technology, because tech is in just about every aspect of what we do, but we're really there to kind of reinforce the relationship part.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
One last thing I'll piggyback on what Kyle said was, in terms about sustainability, we have a program that we call the Flock Leader Program, and that's where we will pay one teacher from each one of our schools to step into leadership. So we'll pay them a stipend to be on our team. So when we come in to do the professional development, they're actually standing up there with us, they're training with us. And so they get that experience to go from teacher to trainer to kind of like that quasi-admin role. And then what we do is we take all the flock leaders from all the different schools and we create a PLC, and we'll put on, you know, a bowling or go-karts or axe throwing or just something fun, like a team builder. And then we'll rent a room and then we just discuss things. We do book studies. We do, you know, cross school collaborations. And then we also just create an atmosphere where we can ask questions so teachers feel like they have a network outside of their, you know, four walls, and they can see perspectively what's going on in their community and within Puerto Rico. So
yeah,
that's a huge part of it, because what we're trying to do, like Kyle said, is we're trying to create these technology integrators where if for whatever reason we weren't there, we weren't able to raise enough money, et cetera, they would still have leaders in-house who've been through the process, the experience, and that could essentially take on the mantle if we were to leave.
Yeah. And I really resonate with the point about like business model and kind of like putting yourselves out of work. We kind of do a similar thing where we, you know, help companies build growth operating systems, you know, that are unique to their specific journey and their use case. And then after a while, yeah, they should not need us. We even helped, you know, clients hire our replacements in terms of, you know, new staff and things like that. So like, that's a very like noble, ethical way to run a business. It's not always best from a financial standpoint, but you know, if you can get a couple good years out of a partnership like that, I think that's really fantastic. And then obviously the results speak for themselves in terms of student achievement and learning and growth. And it sounds like, you know, as much as you know, our podcast is called Tech Can't Save Us and we're called Literal Humans, like we talk about tech all the time, but it always comes back to people, you know, always. and it's people trying to navigate these trends and technological developments and things like that, and just like grapple with what they mean for the work that they're trying to do. So I want to move.
I feel like I would rename your podcast Tech Alone Can't Save Us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's the irony is we end up interviewing amazing folks like yourself who actually are using tech to save. But again, even within that, it's people. You know, it's amazing how much you guys have talked about, you know, bringing teams together and you know, convincing leadership and helping leaders evolve. And you know, you're in the people business, you know, and it's been said that, you know, there are no problems, only people problems, right? And so I'm sure a lot of CIOs and CTOs would disagree with that, but you know, that's a debate for another episode. I want to move us forward and hear from you guys. I would love, you guys have both incredible experiences. Kyle, you've got this, you know, wonderful sort of international array of, you know, experiences that you've had in innovation labs and technology programs all over the world. And Robbie, you authored dozens of technology plans and directed IT for international schools. And, you know, you lead the Caribbean's most impactful ed tech nonprofit at the moment. I'd love to hear like a core lesson from each of you that you've brought from this, you know, amazing mosaic of experiences you've had before into Tech My School. Like what is a core principle you've brought in that's become kind of a feature of Tech My School?
Well, for me, Kyle and I actually worked together in Saudi Arabia. So we were internationally, you know, working together at these different schools. And I actually worked for Kyle. I came in to replace him for a year. So I shadowed him for a year. And so some of the tenets that are part of Tech My School were origined, you know, even way back then, because Kyle and I would brainstorm and talk about ways we can help the school that we were currently in and kind of systematizing our approach. But I think really for Tech My School, in a sense, it all comes down to service. It comes down to helping kids. It comes down to giving kids a rope. And so at the heart of Tech My School is the backstory that I grew up in. So when I was a kid, I was the poor kid at school. I had free lunches. That was like my only food. When I got into college and got an opportunity to work at a school, I knew that's what I wanted to be, was an educator, to give back, to be that, you know, pillar for the next generation of kids who don't have. And then after traveling to 65 countries, working in these international schools, and I worked inner city schools for 6 years as well in San Diego and in Hawaii, coming specifically from Africa, seeing how schools in Africa are kind of structured, and everyone in their mind thinks, okay, Africa's got the worst schools, right? Because they're so poor. At least, you know, that's kind of the thought. And then coming to Puerto Rico, I was, you know, it's America. Like everyone here is an American citizen. They have the same passport as someone in Arizona or New York or Washington. So we're all on the same team. We're all, you know, have that same passport. But the kids here and the schools here, it looks like Africa. And one of the beautiful things about America is that I believe this. I'm not saying we all start at the same place, but if you work really hard, I've never worked in a school in the States where a kid who listened to their teachers, you know, got good grades, didn't become successful, you know, avoided the drugs and all that kind of stuff. But because again, I've worked in inner city schools, I've seen it. But here in Puerto Rico, the difference was, I feel like it's like those schools in India or in Africa or wherever, where even if you're a good kid, you follow the rules, you work hard, you have good parents, you have good families, you may still end up being unsuccessful in life or having these massive hurdles to overcome. I mean, when I first got here, I was talking to 17-year-old kids getting ready to graduate high school. They barely spoke English. They're reading at a third or fourth grade level, and they've never touched a computer before. They may have a phone, but they've never touched an actual computer. So you compare that with kids in any state, and it's like, how are they going to compete with their national peer? And you know what I mean? And so for me, I was like, these kids don't have that rope. And so that's why with Tech, my school was systematizing and learning how to improve schools and essentially creating these ropes in schools and these structures and really that service component of, I want these American kids to have a chance to have the opportunities that all the other kids in the States get. And so, and sadly in Puerto Rico, there's this kind of statement that's, it's not my statement, it's kind of a local statement, which was, the sooner you leave the island, the better your life will be.
That's
so if you leave Puerto Rico at 5 years old and you go to the States, the main, I shouldn't say the States, the continental U.S., you're going to have a better life because you're getting education starting in kindergarten. And by the time you graduate high school, you're going to be like everyone else. Whereas if you leave the island when you're 13, you're going to come over, you know, freshman year of high school. And again, you don't really speak English. You've never touched a computer before. You're reading our average here is about 4 or 5 grade levels below, you know, continental U.S. So you're way behind in everything. But by the end of that high school period, you're going to be better off than if you come from Puerto Rico, you know, as a high school senior or graduate coming to the state as a 19-year-old where you didn't even get that. So I can't fix the entire system, but what we can do is give kids an opportunity to, you know, have a little bit of a rope with teaching them computer skills, showing them, you know, applications like Khan Academy and just some of these basic, you know, Epic. Puerto Rico doesn't have public libraries. As astounding as that is. And so there really isn't, there's such a disparity between what Americans are getting continentally versus what they're getting here. And even compared to Hawaii. So that's a big one for me.
Yeah. People need to understand that, know about it. I think a lot of people wouldn't know that difference and kind of assume maybe. But yeah, Kyle, I love that you guys worked with and for each other before. So that's a really cool story.
Yeah, Kyle, how the tables have turned.
Yeah, exactly.
Reporting to Robbie now.
Who's the better boss?
It's been great. I mean, clearly, Robbie.
No, see, we have a very flat leadership.
That's great. Yeah, cool.
We're learning from each other. Kyle's talented. So
that's great.
Lucky to have it.
We've always been that way, but it didn't matter who was sitting in the bigger chair.
I have to say, this is the first time I've ever, a CEO has brought on a team member who is a director. Yeah. And that's great. I love that because I think sometimes we just get the kind of CEO view, which Robbie, you know this, and Kyle, you know, it's just, I'm the least knowledgeable person in the business half the time. So
and my biggest takeaway, you know, as your question was sort of about all this international experience and been to 30 countries. I didn't realize until this very moment that Robbie had been to that many countries, actually. That's pretty impressive. I'm at 30 and people are usually like, wow. And I hear Robbie's and that's pretty amazing. But okay, so my biggest takeaway is working all over the place and with all these different kids from different countries. I would say that I have worked with kids from more than 50 countries. The thing that sticks out to me is that kids everywhere are all the same. They are all energetic and malleable and full of wonder. They all have these same amazing human qualities. George Kuros has a quote that I love from his book, The Innovator's Mindset. He said, if kids are less curious when they leave us than when we found them, then we failed. Mm. And so for me, I have taken that to heart. And I think that teachers have to be curious so that they can model that same curiosity for kids. I think that is a huge part of what I learned is that if you have a teacher who is on cruise control in their career and just there for the paycheck, it is one of the most consequential career paths to just phone it in. It's not okay. But that being said, the structures we have in place for demoralizing teachers this is not an easy profession. You know, you hear people say nobody goes into it for the money. Of course, you don't go into it for the money, but you have to go into it for the right reasons. And the right reasons, I think, are that you want to model a love of learning for kids. And that's it. Like the way we deal with the way we do the flock leader program with the leaders, what we're really trying to do by building their PLC, their professional learning communities, what we're trying to do is to get them talking to each other about their practice, right? Mm-hmm. Which research shows is one of the biggest indicators of increases in student achievement as a school is this collective efficacy, this idea that teachers believe that kids can grow. And what we're doing is we're trying to get them to reinvigorate their curiosity and their love of learning. And when they have that, you take that into the classroom and that is infectious. Like if you get a kid, there's a great quote and I'm going to totally slaughter it, but there's a quote about the basically like you are, if you are unwilling to learn, no one can help you. And if you demand, gosh, I told you I'm going to slaughter this one, essentially like if you're curious and you demand to learn, no one can stop you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's how, aside from my slaughtering the quote, like that's how we feel. That's how we view teaching and learning is that our job as leaders in schools is to lead those who lead others. Mm-hmm. The job of the teacher as a leader is that their job is to model this love of learning for kids.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that like sort of equanimity, you know, across humanity. That's powerful. And you're giving me flashbacks to being in the classroom. And it's one of the reasons that at Little Humans, you know, always learning is our number one value. It's our first, you know, value. And you know, we're always shouting out people when we see them taking a course or, you know, sharing an insight with the team and things like that. And like really just trying to build that learning culture. Like I knew that was probably number one when I started the organization. So, you know, we paid for courses for people and all that stuff. So it's really important. And I couldn't agree with you. We'll have to wrap it up there, but this has been a fantastic conversation, guys. Really enjoyed talking to you both, Robbie and Kyle. I think you're showing that, you know, meaningful modernization, what it looks like when it's done with humility and community partnership and kind of a proper understanding and empathy for where teachers and school leaders and students actually are and meeting them there. I think Tech My School proves that, you know, you don't need flashy tools, you need systems and support, and, you know, you need leaders who understand the realities that teachers face in the classroom. So thank you guys for joining us so much. I know your time is valuable. Let our listeners know, where can they find out more about Tech My School and how schools can get involved?
Yeah, so we have a website, techmyschool.org. We have an Instagram, all those kind of things at Tech My School. If your school needs any kind of professional growth opportunities, if you want to support our mission, if you want to donate technology, we have a lot of partners in that sense. If your school wants discounted software, that's another component to our model is that we help schools get discounted software through our partners. If you are wanting to just learn more, you know, you can reach out info@techmyschool.org. And lots of different ways you can reach out to Tech My School and be a part of the mission. Kyle?
Yeah, I would say that our strategic planning tools that we walk schools through, that process is really valuable. It's not expensive and it yields huge results for schools. So if that's something that your listeners are interested in, definitely hit us up. Yeah. There's a contact form on the website, techmyschool.org, or just hit us up at info@techmyschool.org.
We have the biggest and best conference here in Puerto Rico. We do it at the Windham Rio Mar, right on the water. So if you want to escape the winter in February, in April, you can head down to Puerto Rico and just be part of this great ed tech conference. Whether you want to be a speaker, a vendor, or just want to be a participant, we'd love to have you. We have the cultural thing, dancers and food and all that kind of stuff, but it's also still very classy. We have over 30 speakers, so it's going to be great. And George Quiros is actually going to keynote for us this year.
Nice.
Well, shout out to George.
I'd be seeing you in Puerto Rico in April then, Robbie and Kyle. That's,
we'd love it.
Just invited myself to your conference, but
come. Free tickets on us. Come.
Oh, appreciate it. Well, listen, thanks everybody for listening. It's been another great episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast with Robbie and Kyle from Tech My School. And they're doing fantastic work in the U.S. and the Caribbean to help schools modernize and really embed a learning culture around tech modernization. So thank you guys for what you're doing. And as always, please leave a review, star rating. It helps us bring on more great guests like Robbie and Kyle. So thanks everybody for listening. Have a great day. We'll